Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C. This is Agriculture Today.
The nuts and bolts issues are still not defined.
Washburn University law professor Roger McCohen on WOTUS.
I will focus on what is a ditch, what are they going to take to be their position from a regulatory standpoint with respect to ditches and even other farm features that are filled with water only sometimes, such as these ephemeral streams. Are they changing their longstanding definition of those to conform to the Sackett opinion, or are we going to have more litigation on these particular issues? And I still kind of feel that this is not going to be over in the courts. We're probably going to have more litigation with respect to even these amendments. But at least we have a more clear U.S. Supreme Court opinion than we've ever had. And again, we had unanimity on the fact that the significant nexus test was the incorrect test. And that is a step forward.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Without this bill, Mr. Speaker, California and other Democratic states could effectively ban internal combustion engines for all Americans, regardless of where they reside.
Debate on the House floor Thursday, led by Dr. Michael Burgess, representative from Texas.
This is not what the founders intended when they designed our federalist system. But a de facto ban on the internal combustion engine is the point, Mr. Speaker. When President Biden and his surrogates in the Democratic Party said, and I quote, Mr. Speaker, to end fossil fuels as we know them, end quote. Shame on us if we don't take the Democrats at their word when they say things like that. I understand that my friend and fellow member of the Rules Committee, who I have the privilege of debating today on the floor, will likely tell us the standards that California is looking to implement are the prerogative of California, and in most circumstances, I would agree with that. But this isn't most circumstances, Mr. Speaker. What California is trying to do is to usher in a de facto ban on the internal combustion engine nationwide. I will give my friends across the aisle cunning for their initiative. Democrats have known that several states are aligned with California in such a manner that allows California to set vehicle emission standards that other states must then follow. Why any state would surrender their own sovereignty to another is not consistent with this country's founding. There's a debate, Mr. Speaker, there, but it's for another day. This is why we Republicans, particularly Republicans on the Energy and Commerce Committee, oppose state attempts to ban the internal combustion engine. This will adversely affect all Americans. Mr. Speaker, California's waiver is a Trojan horse. What Democrats can't win at the ballot box, they intend to farm out to their friends in federal agencies. California is part of America, but does not speak for the whole of America.
He led the Republicans, the Democrats led by New Mexico Representative Teresa Fernandez.
Extreme Republicans are blowing up our commitment to the American people. My rural district, it'll suffer. It'll suffer tremendously, as will all rural districts across its country. And we need to remember, rural America is the backbone of this country, and they are sacrificing it. A shutdown could delay veterans and Social Security payments. With 8 legislative days to avoid a government shutdown, we have a bill totally unrelated to funding the government. H.R. 1435, Preserving Choice in Vehicle Purchases Act, is an attack on efforts to reduce pollution and climate change. I've noticed that the Republicans have a habit of naming their bills to do the opposite of what the bill actually does. This legislation will remove the choice that Californians have exercised as they elect their own government, and as they choose to look to how do they want to make sure they exercise their right to adopt clean air standards. For decades, the Clean Air Act has reduced harmful air pollutants, leading to fewer instances of respiratory diseases, cardiovascular problems, and other health issues. That's in part to the law's flexibility. It allows flexibility to allow choice for California and other states to adopt strict standards. H.R. 1435 threatens our efforts to lessen air pollution and reduce greenhouse gas emissions and fight climate change. It also disrupts the U.S. vehicle market and could harm our global competitiveness in the electric vehicle market. I will say it again, however, at a time when we have a duty to fund the government, the Republican majority is instead picking on states' rights, picking on states that want to clean up their air and fight climate change.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
China is much more than just a mere competitor.
Former ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley, speaking at an American Enterprise Institute event back in June, focused on China and trade.
Communist China is an enemy. It is the most dangerous foreign threat we've faced since the Second World War. We have to stop wasting time. That was true 4 years ago when I said as much in Seoul. It is more so today. It is time to marshal our strength and national will. We must respond in three ways: domestically, economically, and militarily. Confronting China starts at home. We must systematically eliminate its interference and infiltration of our society.
Now, many already realize the predicament we're in with China being a big trading partner, but also a competitor.
You know, 4 years ago, last month, shortly after I left the United Nations, I gave a policy speech about China. I was in Seoul, South Korea. One part of the speech was about what I had seen at the United Nations. The other part was a broader look at the West's approach to China over the past several decades. I warned about China's growing military power, its growing repression at home and aggression abroad, and its growing challenge to American interests and America itself. I specifically called out its military-civil fusion program, where the Chinese Communist Party exploits American companies to strengthen its military. I urged our leaders to, quote, think about China critically, creatively, and courageously. China's police state is more comprehensive. It has destroyed freedom in Hong Kong. It has deepened its genocide of the Uyghurs. It is threatening Taiwan daily. Its No Limits alliance with Russia has cemented. And of course, there was COVID. Despite its ongoing attempts at cover-up, the Chinese Communist Party bears responsibility for the worst worldwide pandemic in a century, with up to 20 million deaths. Through it all, the Chinese military has become even stronger, testing us like never before. Last month, a Chinese fighter jet came within 400 feet of an American aircraft flying in international airspace above the South China Sea. Earlier this month, a Chinese naval ship came within 150 yards of an American destroyer in the Taiwan Strait. We all remember the Chinese spy balloon that flew over our homeland just months ago. It wasn't taking pictures of our prairies or our beaches. It was flying over American nuclear missile sites. And this month it was revealed that China has developed a spy base in our own backyard on the fellow communist island of Cuba. These provocations are not coincidences or accidents. They are the purposeful actions of a communist dictatorship that is determined to expand its power and defeat America militarily and economically.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
So global balance sheet, a few things to note here.
Mark Jekinowski is chairman of USDA's World Ag Outlook Board, looking at the balance sheet for wheat.
Production, we talked about production down overall globally. Feed use up a bit, however, and that mainly reflects a couple things. Lower quality wheat, especially in China, given the rainfall that they've had during harvest period, and also higher feed use in the EU, where also there's been some rain during the harvest period that deteriorated the quality there. So more wheat going into feed use in those two areas. Global trade, lower exports out of Australia and Canada and the EU, offset to some degree by higher exports out of Ukraine, Russia, and Kazakhstan. We raised our Ukraine export forecast by 500,000 tons, so it's now at 11 million. U.S. balance sheet, U.S. wheat balance sheet, nothing going on there. Just some offsetting changes on exports, kind of hidden behind this balance sheet. A little bit of a decline in HRW exports, perfectly offset by an increase in hard red spring exports. So $10 million down on hard red winter, $10 million up on hard red spring.
That's wheat. And for dairy?
Dairy supply and demand. Milk production for the current calendar year, 2023, we pulled lower by about 400 million pounds. That reflects two things, lower cow numbers and also lower milk per cow, reflecting the heat across the country over the past month, hot conditions, reducing milk productivity, reducing milk per cow. We expect that to improve into 2024. So for 2024, that reduction only reflects lower cows in the first half, lower cow numbers in the first half of the year. Milk per cow, we expect to bounce back. In terms of imports and exports, fat basis imports down a bit. That's both that's butter and cheese, lower imports for that. Fat basis exports, no change for 2023, but for 2024, lower exports of butter. And skim solids basis, lower exports of mainly whey and whey products. And dairy prices, we'll wrap things up with dairy prices. Reflecting pretty good price strength across the board for most of the products. Tight stocks and relatively strong demand for cheese and butter, supporting prices there for in both the current calendar year and looking forward into 2024. Non-fat dry milk, of course, is the exception, reflecting international markets and relatively competition from international markets, and potentially more. Higher supplies, given if we produce more butter, we also produce more non-fat dry, and that is weighing on prices there. So then when we look at it all in terms of the class prices, class three prices higher, both in 2023 and 2024, reflecting those stronger prices for cheese and whey, and class four prices reflecting stronger butter prices, that more than offset lower prices for non-fat dry milk. And all milk price raised for both 2023 and 2024, as you can see. Still down just a bit year over year in 2024.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Mr. Speaker, I strongly oppose of this Republican's latest assault on the health and safety of our children.
California Representative, former Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, on Thursday.
Every child deserves clean air to breathe. We in California believe this is our sacred duty. That is why our state has taken strong action to reduce vehicle pollution, preserve our environment, and protect our children. So I just have one question for our allies across, our colleagues across the aisle. Why? Why don't you want children to have cleaner air to breathe? Why don't you understand what this means to their health? Why do you not understand the connection between pollution and asthma and how unfair that is to children in our population?
Representative Pete Stauber from Minnesota.
I reject that premise. Because this administration would rather mine in the Congo, where they use child slave labor, zero environmental standards, and zero labor standards to get to these EV vehicles. This administration has stopped mining in the biggest copper nickel find in the world, which is in northeastern Minnesota. And my colleagues on the other side of the aisle and this administration has stopped it. So don't come here and ask me why my Republican colleagues and I have the stance we have. We are environmentalists, and we want clean air and clean water. That's an excuse. We can mine in this country. We do not have to put memorandums of understanding with the Congo, who use child slave labor. And that's a fact. We can mine in northeastern Minnesota using union labor with the best environmental standards and the best labor standards in the world. But my colleagues on the other side of the aisle refuse to allow it to happen along with this administration. Don't stand on this House floor and say this about the Republican Party and my colleagues. We are environmentalists as well. We mine in the United States of America. We mine in northeastern Minnesota. We can show the world, because when we allow China to take the demands for critical minerals, that pollutant gets in the jet stream and affects us all, as the gentle lady from California says. We breathe that disgusting air that comes from the communist country of China. So let us mine here, Mr. Speaker. Allow this administration to let us mine here.
And New Mexico's Teresa Fernandez.
What we are for is consumer safety. Should we allow consumers to choose leaded gas once again? No, because we know what it does to our children's lungs. 100 million Americans live in counties with unhealthy air pollution. Our children, our elders, low-income communities, and communities of color are most at risk. And you know what? The good news is we are addressing it. The good news is with the CHIPS and Science Act, we're starting to do the research that will lead to even bigger and better advances in how we bring down those emissions. With the bipartisan infrastructure law and the Inflation Reduction Act, we are building out the electric charging stations that we need so you can get across Minnesota, New Mexico, and everywhere in between if you choose to have an electric vehicle.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
This has been one of the biggest issues in agriculture this year, particularly because we've had the U.S. Supreme Court decide a case on what the definition of a wetland is for purposes of the Clean Water Act and jurisdiction by the Corps of Engineers and the EPA. And prior to the opinion being released on May 25, the agencies had actually put out a new rule overturning the Trump administration rule and focusing on the significant nexus test. Well, when the Supreme Court opinion came down in late May, it basically largely obliterated the agency's new rule, which went into effect in March.
Washburn University law professor Roger McCohen on WOTUS, or Waters of the U.S.
Well, Sackett's had a tract of land in northern Idaho that was about 100 yards from Priest Lake. Now, Priest Lake is a jurisdictional water of the United States, but there was no continuous surface water connection from their tract across other tracts to the lake, and the government came in and said, well, there's a significant nexus. It's connected to this, it's connected to that, that flows into Priest Lake, and that's how they claim jurisdiction. And that's what the court said was wrong. That is the incorrect way to determine whether a wet area is a jurisdictional wetland. And that's why this is important for agriculture, because the agencies will not be able to play connect the dots with a small wet area in a farm field or a ditch or a stream that often, say, in western Kansas does not have water in it. They can't use that to connect to something else, to connect to something else that ultimately flows, for example, into the Missouri River, which is a water of the United States. So this is the Sackett opinion is very favorable for agriculture, but I would remind people that even though we have these EPA amendments and the EPA and the Corps appear to be conforming their rule to what the U.S. Supreme Court has said, that there are still other ways that farmers can get in trouble with the federal government when it comes to wetlands. One of those is under the Swamp Buster rules. And Swamp Buster completely has a different definition of a wetland for government jurisdictional purposes than do the EPA and the Corps under the Clean Water Act. Swamp Buster involves eliminating federal farm program benefits if you farm what is deemed to be a wetland. And the definition of a wetland there is totally different. So farmers and ranchers still have to worry about that. And that has absolutely nothing to do with what we're talking about here on the EPA. And so farmers have to remember they can get caught two different ways with respect to wetlands.
So what were EPA's amendments?
Well, they did several things, and of course the two big ones that we mentioned is that they removed the significant nexus test. That's a big one. And they said that we're limiting jurisdiction over wetlands to just those that are relatively permanent and have a continuous service connection to navigable waterways. So those are the two main points. So I take from that that wetlands which would share a surface water connection with the water of the United States and no longer have that connection due to man-made barriers such as levees and dikes or sand dunes, they're no longer included in the definition of the LOTUS. And so that's what I was talking about a moment ago, where you can't connect the dots. And so if you've got man-made barriers, the significant nexus test cannot be used to connect that wet area to a jurisdictional water of the United States. The other thing I would point out is that these amendments became effective immediately as soon as they were issued on August 29, and they were finalized without the agencies issuing a draft for public comment under the Administrative Procedures Act. The agencies were relying on a good cause exception that is contained in the Administrative Procedures Act, claiming that the rule was sufficiently urgent that they had to get this out. And of course, they were saying that the Supreme Court put them in this position. But I have said all along that they were kind of foolish for putting the rule out in advance of the Supreme Court's opinion, because the Supreme Court could invalidate it. And indeed, they did in large part.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
This term that we see a lot, the dollar value of about $20 per ton.
Texas A&M AgriLife Extension livestock economist Dr. David Anderson on gross and net prices for carbon.
And that range, you'll see a range from $18 to $22. That's really become a price or a value that's been quoted a lot in the marketplace. I think it's very important to realize that, again, to reiterate what Tiffany said, in dollars per ton, if the change in carbon in your soil that you're looking at is 0.1 ton, then that change, that value per acre, is going to be about $2. So we're really talking about this in terms of the change you're going to provide. Again, dovetailing with this production risk that Jason talked about, with this value in the marketplace of really $20 per ton. So again, that idea of change, the increase in production, and this is really the marketplace that we're seeing right now. So again, I think there's a couple of important parts here. The companies, a Google or whoever who are buying these may very well be paying much more for that dollars per ton, but those companies in the middle who are putting this together and making this market happen have costs as well. And so we're getting to this idea of this $20 per ton net to a farmer or rancher. On this production risk idea, lots of ag practices can store carbon, as we've talked about. And what I would get us to think about is that we are competing in this marketplace. As either we think of it as ranchers or as the rangeland, the rangeland's ability to increase carbon storage, we are competing in a marketplace with all the way from forestry and trees, row cropping systems, to a lot of other more high-tech systems for pulling carbon out of the air. And if we think about in this marketplace, every one of these practices has a cost with them to provide. This $20 per ton of carbon in the marketplace then really kind of dictates what kind of practices we're going to see first. And the ones that are the lowest cost to provide or that can be profitably provided at $20 per ton is what's going to happen first. So, you know, I would work into this. I think it's very important as we figure out, am I changing my practices on the ranch, my grazing system, whatever it is I'm doing to increase soil carbon storage to then generate this carbon payment? I would really strongly urge the thing to think about is those practices that you're putting in place have to be profitable to do. If we think of this $20 per ton and the net price being some fraction of that, based on how much the increase in carbon you can get, some of those dollars, if, for example, if it's 0.1 ton, it's $2 per acre. That's not a lot of money in terms if we think about increasing or changing our system of production that may very well change our costs, but also may change our returns. So I want to think about this, not just signing a contract and getting a check, but how it fits into the total ranch operation so that the practice you're putting in place is profitable to do so first. I think that's really a kind of a critical thing to think about in this market.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Another week-over-week decline in total U.S. pasture and rangeland conditions per the most recent USDA report for the period ending September 10th.
We have seen some late-season heat recently. It's also been relatively dry across large parts of the country, at least up through September 10th.
As a result,
we're seeing just one-third of the nation's rangeland and pasture, 33%, rated good to excellent. That is a 3 percentage point decrease from last week. At the same time, 39% very poor to poor. That's a 3-point increase from last week on September 3rd.
Rippey adds that pasture and rangeland very good to excellent condition is slightly better than this time last year.
There are 13 states where pastures are rated at least 60% good to excellent, almost all of them in the eastern United States and the vast majority in the northeast, but there are 3 states in the west where we have seen a little bit wetter weather this summer.
Those states, Colorado, Utah, and Wyoming. I'm Ron Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.